I always knew I wanted to be a journalist. So as a working class girl without any discernible talent, I thought, how am I going to do something that's glamorous and has a level of power attached to it? And I thought, magazines. The minute I got on women's magazines, I was in features. I thought, what department's the most fun, but also has a serious side to it? For me, beauty was the perfect blend of art and science. That's how I ended up in beauty. I was with a friend who was working in America, actually, in PR at Maybelline. And she said to me, there's a revolution coming and legacy media is going to start contracting and it's all going to become digital. So you'd better pivot your lazy ass. And I started my YouTube channel at the age of 53. And then what I did was I put my first YouTube video up. And I genuinely thought I was going to get thousands of views. And it was like standing at the abyss and going, hello? Hello?
Is anyone there?
Is anyone there?
Tell me a bit about your menopause. How has that impacted on your life, but also your career?
Nobody spoke about the menopause when I went through the menopause, and it was only 15 years ago that I started going through the menopause. And I think in a world of Davina McCall, we forget that. This is going to sound like bad news to anybody listening to this, but your skin actually doesn't start to age when you go through the menopause. It's the 10 and 20 years after you go through the menopause that you're really going to notice the difference. I don't get these high-pressure 10-step routine. I don't get the filtered desire to be perfect. Because if you have a desire to be perfect when you're young, you're never going to come to terms with getting older.
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasko. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasko, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by the Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause. Today, we're joined by a fabulous, highly regarded beauty editor, TV presenter, and trusted voice in the world of skincare and beauty. Known for her no-nonsense approach and passion for empowering women, Nadine has spent over 25 years sharing expert advice and debunking beauty myths. From navigating midlife skincare to embracing beauty without filters, she brings a wealth of knowledge and authenticity to the conversation. Welcome to Grit and Grace, Nadine Baggett. Nadine, hi. Thank you so much for joining me in my living room.
It's the most beautiful house.
Thank you. It really looks better than this when it's not a TV set. You've had an absolutely incredible career spanning 25 years plus in the beauty industry. How did you get started? Take us back to the beginning.
So I always knew I wanted to be a journalist. And for me, a journalist at the time probably meant a local newspaper. I dreamt about working on women's magazines. Now, you've got to realise that this is a time when magazines ruled the world, essentially. So as a working class girl without any discernible talent, I couldn't sing, I couldn't dance, I couldn't act. I thought, how am I going to do something that's glamorous and has a level of power attached to it? Not well paid at all. And I thought, magazines, that makes perfect sense. So after graduating, I did a postgraduate diploma in journalism, and then I slowly worked my way up through trade magazines and then onto women's magazines. And then the minute I got on women's magazines, I was in features. I thought, what department's the most fun, but also has a serious side to it? And for me, beauty was the perfect blend of art and science. That's how I ended up in beauty.
And what's been the most rewarding moment and also the most fun moment in the last 25 years, maybe even the darkest moment? Actually, let's do the full.
You want me to do all three?
Come on, all of it, all of it.
So the most rewarding moment was as a working class girl, and I just hinted that journalists are appallingly paid, but we are treated very well. We are given lovely trips and lovely opportunities. And I remember the time I got to take my parents to a big sporting event, and it was sort of second nature to me, but a car came and picked us up and we arrived and we were in a VIP booth and there was endless champagne and food. And to see working class parents that spent their whole life working in a factory and had sacrificed so much to give me the opportunities I had to get a taste of what I then took for granted was just a really heartwarming moment. Really, really lovely. I mean, I was the first person in my family to go to university and certainly the first person to have this level of success or of a profession.
They were proud.
Was really touched. I was really touched. I'm a complete daddy's girl. And yes, so that was the moment I was most, that sort of made my heart swell. I would have to say that the darkest moments, and this is controversial for me to say, is that working in an industry basically essentially powered by women, I was shocked at how women can bully women. And I've been made to cry by a couple of editors in my time. And what was the other one?
The good, the bad and the ugly. So the, okay. Those the most fun things.
That's the ugly. The bad is an interesting moment because I also worked in magazines at a tipping point when magazines started to fail because of digital media. And I remember losing my job through no fault of anybody. Basically, magazines were starting to contract, circulations were starting to go down. And I had to cold call the Daily Mail, which was very scary. And a woman picked up the phone and said, you know, she had no idea who I was. And I said, are you looking for a freelance journalist? And she said, well, I'll commission you to do a couple of pieces, but I'm not paying you if they're not any good. I was like, okay, fine. So I went away and wrote a couple of pieces. And I remember then getting a message the next day saying, we're running both of them unchanged, they're amazing, you've got a job here whenever you want. And that was a moment where I thought, oh, actually, despite what the bullying editor said that told me I couldn't write, I actually could write. So it's a roller coaster, but generally, it's a great industry to work in, I love it.
And you've been on a career arc that's involved reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
Through necessity, really, in a way, because
yes.
The industry changed, things changed, you changed what you do. And you move from that to being on telly or at the same time. Talk about career pivoting, that the podcast is about women's adventures in midlife and the grit and grace that they need to get through this chapter into an amazing life. And we're trying to showcase women who've done brilliant things but who've changed what they do. So how did that feel and when did that happen?
So I have always come, and I'm going to steal Bethany Frankel's phrase here, I've always come from a place of yes. So as a young person being given opportunity, I would always come from a place where if I was asked to do anything, I'd say yes. So went to work on women's magazines, got a phone call one day from the press office and they said to me, do you want to go and present an item on television? And I didn't think for a second, I just went yes. And no, zero experience. And magazines and newspapers and television companies are quite closely aligned because they tend to sort of steal ideas from each other. And what would happen was I would write a piece for the Daily Mail and then a television company would want to run it as an item. And I think they probably thought, oh, well, rather than pay a presenter to come on and present it. So that's how I ended up getting into television. So I'd done the writing and I'd done the presenting. And then what happened was magazines started to contract. And I was with a friend who was working in America, actually, in PR at Maybelline. And she said to me, and this was probably about 10, 12 years ago, she said to me, there's a revolution coming and legacy media is going to start contracting and it's all going to become digital. So you'd better pivot your lazy ass and go and create a YouTube channel. Or Instagram wasn't even around. So that's why I was forced to do YouTube. And I started my YouTube channel at the age of 53.
How did that feel?
I uploaded my first piece of content when I was 54. Frightening, but I was also ridiculously naive. I'd come from...
How did you film it? What happened?
So
what was
I had
it?
I had to force myself to do it. So I'm comfortable in front of the camera. That's not a problem. I'd done years of live television, mainly on This Morning, although I'd also worked for the BBC as well. But I had to learn to set up my camera, edit, light, do my sound myself in a very amateurish way compared to the setup you have here. But it was a moment that I think, my only regret is I didn't do it sooner. And it was a moment that I thought, I already have the skills needed, but I need to develop a few new skills and then start doing it. And then what I did was I put my first YouTube video up and I genuinely thought I was going to get thousands of views. And it was like standing at the abyss and going, hello, hello.
Is anyone there?
Is anyone there? So I was naive, but I think that naivety was an advantage. Because within a year, I'd started getting paid content and it started, because I was doing it all in my spare time as well as having a full-time job. And that's quite scary when you're in your sort of early 50s at a time when most people are being put out to pasture. But then it started to tick over, and then I started to realise that my friend in America was right. This, you have to be a multi-hyphenate now to survive. And even now, so it's been how many years? It's been nearly 10 years since I started. I have people come up from legacy media going to me, you really did it. You weren't messing around, right? Talking about grit and grace, I have a lot of grit.
Meant it. Do you think of yourself as an entrepreneur?
I don't. Why? It's very interesting. I don't know. It's silly, isn't it? Because I think of people like you that own brands and that employ people as an entrepreneur. I consider myself a self-employed, I will always be a journalist. I'm not an influencer, I'm not an Instagrammer, I'm not a TikToker, I'm a journalist. So I consider myself a journalist and I'm very proud to be a journalist. But I don't consider myself a brand, I consider myself just me. So I admire...
I think you are.
Thank you. But I admire female entrepreneurs so much. I support female brand founders so much because I admire the extra effort they go to do what they do. And I admire people that employ other people and end up creating this sort of network of powerful people and families that they support. I admire that probably more than anything.
So let's get to the meat of it all. What should we be doing in midlife? And what happens when you hear from women aged 46, 7, 8, you know, 50, who say, my face is falling off? What do I do?
I get hundreds of DMs a day, and I go out of my way to answer them, and I try answering them. And then one of the nicest things, pieces of feedback I get is, oh, you really do answer your DMs.
You're a real person.
Yeah, I'm a real person. And I think what's happened is I have gone through an arc of being a beauty editor on various glossy magazines and newspapers, where the arc is that the big five beauty companies would court you and do lovely things for you in a sort of unspoken rule that you would then write about their products. So it's editorial, but it has a hint of advertising about it in beauty and in fashion. And even in travel. And I think that's very interesting. And I noticed that coming out of features. So that was the arc. And then what happened was there was a revolution in the beauty industry at exactly the same time there was a revolution in legacy media. So while legacy media was contracting, I happened to interview probably the greatest beauty entrepreneur, probably since Anita Roddick at The Body Shop. And that was the gentleman that started The Ordinary, did the Deciem companies, Brandon Truax. And Brandon Truax was a true revolutionary. And he essentially had spent a while working in finance for one of the big beauty companies that I shan't name here, but that most people would know if they know anything about Brandon Truax. And he saw the back end of the beauty industry. And he saw the incredible markups on beauty products. And the sort of myth, mystery, and legend around a lot of French beauty companies. And he said, I can create this product at far less money, probably in not as nice packaging, and I can start to educate the public on the basic science of skincare and what they need to do. And I interviewed him, and I adored him, and I just thought he was an absolute creative genius. And that was a tipping point where I suddenly realized that my content should be about making basic skincare science and telling my followers about effective, affordable skincare. That should be the crux of what I do. And I stand by it today. I've just come back from the American Academy of Dermatology, and 95% of brands there that are recommended by dermatologists are affordable high street products. And that's the revolution that's happened in skincare at the same time as the digital revolution. And I happen to come along at exactly the right time with the right skills to deliver that content. So it was part luck and part design.
So give me the five things that I need to do, that we need to do.
You need to cleanse your skin, and you need to cleanse your skin and respect your skin barrier. And that's really easy. You use a wash off cleanser gel in the morning in the shower, so you don't have to think about it. You can put it in your shower. Your daughter can use it. Your partner can use it. Everybody can use it. You can use it from head to toe. And at night you use a rinse off cream cleanser. I team mine with a microfiber cloth. That's just because you and I wear makeup and we need to get rid of our makeup. And then in the morning, I use a vitamin C serum, and then I use a peptide serum. Then I might use a moisturizer, but I use an SPF. And at night, I cleanse my skin, and then I use a retinoid, and a retinoid is a vitamin A. And essentially what you're doing is you're not believing the myth and the magic and the mystery of obscure ingredients that cost an absolute fortune that are sourced, you know, picked by virgins, by the moonlight, up a mountain somewhere that costs an absolute fortune and is covered in cellophane and gold. What you're doing is you're looking at basic skincare chemistry. And what happens when you hit menopause is, in fact, it happens from around your mid to late 30s. What happens is your skin essentially stops repairing itself so quickly. It stops turning over so quickly. And some of the key ingredients in your skin start to diminish. And it happens to everybody. But for women, it's very hormonal led. So for men, age is a slow, steady decline, and women tend to sort of go down in jumps and leaps. And it's because that's hormonally driven. So what you're doing is you're looking to replace back in your skin the things your skin is lacking. And it's very easy. There's some B vitamins, there's some A vitamins, there's some C vitamins. There's some humectants like hyaluronic acid, glycerin. Everything that I recommend is something that is naturally found in the skin. So you're not looking for some obscure plant, wonderful mystery product that costs thousands of pounds. That is all myth. Basic skincare science works. And everything I've learned from formulating chemists, toxicologists, and dermatologists.
What about tweakments?
Yes.
I sort of hate the word.
Yes.
But do we like the word?
I hate the word because I think it diminishes what is actually quite serious.
Yes.
And
talk
I am a fan of
that.
Tweakments.
Okay, what?
So I've been a human guinea pig over the years. I really have. It's your
You've
job.
Done everything.
It's your job.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a beauty editor, it's your job. And I've had good and bad tweakments, and I've regretted some tweakments. You probably can't see closely, but I have IPL marks across my chest where I was burnt, where I had some pigmentation lasered off, and I got burnt. Anyway, I like a little bit of Botox, but I like a little bit of baby Botox. As you can see from my face, it moves quite a lot. In fact, I did a live the other day with Johnny Bettridge. He said to me, oh, your Botox needs topping up. And I said, no, I quite like it like this, because I'm on live TV, I don't like a frozen face. And also at my age, I can't have a frozen face up here and then a sort of sagging bit down here. Anyway, so I like a little bit of baby Botox. I like a skin booster, but they're quite expensive. And I have had filler in the past, but I've got quite a large face. And I think filler tends to work with quite slimmer faces. So you have to be careful. I've got a quite a large Eastern European face. So if you fill it, it just gets a little bit larger and larger and larger, which isn't necessary. That's that pillow face that people are wary of. So I am absolutely a fan of tweakments, but I think we need to remember that they need to be done by a medical professional, and they are pretty much always invasive. They're not surgical, but they are invasive. So they need to be taken seriously, and they need to be done by a medical professional, and they are expensive.
And how do you think the system works in the UK around regulation?
It doesn't. There is
no
regulation.
Work. And what can we do about that?
It's a weird, wild, wild west. So I think there are lots of really, really reputable doctors and nurse practitioners and dentists that are working hard. And there are lots of surgeons that are working really hard to get it regulated. The problem is it's going to come down to the government, and the government have far more important things to do. And it doesn't matter how many poor women die of badly done BBLs, or they go to Turkey and they have botched teeth or whatever. It's so low on the list of priorities of a government that's got its back against the wall that I just can't ever see it being regulated in the near future. So it sort of becomes it's a sort of voluntary self-regulatory industry, which is dangerous. So you do have beauty therapists and hairdressers injecting faces, and it's wrong.
What about supplements? I'm doing the full list of you.
Right.
Is it worth taking collagen?
I don't take collagen. I feel that the research is coming in now about joints, and I think it works well for joints. I think the research has come in from a couple of companies, and you need hydrolyzed collagen, which is just broken down collagen. Both either marine or bovine, which comes from a cow, and it's been shown now to improve hydration within the skin. And actually, hydration is important. It seems like it's a throwaway thing that, you know, you can put a moisturizer on. But as you get postmenopausal, the skin finds it harder to hydrate. So from that point of view, yes. From a compliance point of view of drinking it every day, you need 20 grams of hydrolyzed marine or bovine collagen. That's quite a lot, and it's quite expensive. And it has a tendency to taste just a little bit fishy or beefy. I don't eat red meat for various different reasons, but I don't eat red meat, so mine would be marine collagen. I know lots of people swear by it. I think the jury is still out and I still think it's expensive. I think probably if you're going to have to choose between that and a good moisturiser and a retinoid at night, a vitamin A at night, I'd probably spend my money there. However, I do take other supplements. I lost my hair in COVID, or it thinned a lot, which was partly hormonal and partly related to COVID. So I then went to a trichologist and had a full blood workout, and I take iron, vitamin D. Everybody should be taking vitamin D in the UK anyway. I take probiotics because I have a lifelong history of IBS, although it is easing now, I'm getting older. And so I take two different probiotics. I take vitamin D, I take iron, and I have to have B12 injections because I can't absorb B12 as well. So,
do you put anything on your hair? I have hair problems because I have thyroid issues.
Your hair is gorgeous.
It's not mine, Di. what, does any of that work?
Do you know, I have to say, undiagnosed thyroid issues is one of the most common causes of thinning hair. And one of the things I always say, because I get hundreds of messages whenever I speak about my hair, and mine is female pattern hair loss, so mine is through here, those little sort of balding bits there. So it's just the fringe really, the rest of it is fine. I always say, you need to go and have a blood test. You can't take blood and supplementation. And the problem with social media is people don't want to read my articles or watch my videos. They just say, tell me what to take. Just the one supplement, and I say you can't. You can have a blood test, you need to get diagnosed with the vitamins and minerals you're missing, or the hormonal issues you have. So for example, for you it could be thyroxine. For me, obviously, I need HRT to try and balance out the action of the androgen through here, which as you get older, the action of the androgen on the hair follicles affects the hair loss. So I do believe in supplements, but I believe in some sort of medical diagnosis first, and sadly that can be expensive.
Tell me a bit about your menopause. When did you start? How old were you when you started taking out HRT? What was the conversation at the time? How has that impacted on your life, but also your career?
Nobody spoke about the menopause when I went through the menopause, and it was only 15 years ago that I started going through the menopause. And I think in a world of Davina McCall, we forget that a pre-menopausal awareness era happened. So I was raised by a mother that never spoke about it. I never spoke to my sisters about it. And as usual, what happens, because I was a health journalist as well as being a beauty journalist for years, as usual, what happens is if I go through something, I then own that. And so then I'm the big sister to all my friends. And I was like, you have spoken to your mother about your menopause, right? You did ask your mother when she went through the menopause, because that's a difficult conversation to have, especially if it's intergenerational, because a lot of women, my mother is nearly 90, she just wouldn't speak about that. She would be embarrassed about it. So I probably was perimenopausal when I was about 45, but I blamed it on my boyfriend. I blamed it on the boiler. I blamed it on the duvet. I blamed it on the cats. I blamed it on anything that would explain these sudden hot flushes in the middle of the night. And then one day I was seeing an aesthetic doctor called Dr. Francis Prenner-Jones, who was about to do my Botox. And I'm sure she won't mind me saying this, but she's a little bit of a germ phobic. And so she was just about to inject my face, and I had a daytime flush. You know when the sort of sweat starts to prickle on your brow? And she sort of jumped back from me as if she was going to catch something. And she went, are you coming down with something? And I said, oh no. I said, I think I've been having them at night, and I've tried various soy isoflavones, and they're not working. But I'm beginning to get them during the day. And she went, well, don't be ridiculous, Nadine. Let's take a blood test. She slapped my arm, took an arm of blood out. And she is a brilliant aesthetic doctor, but she has absolutely no bedside manner. Now, I have never wanted children, so it's never, my fertility has never been an issue for me. But I walked back in 3 days later. She went, yes, you're definitely menopausal. Right, okay, let's get you on HRT. And I was like, okay, so I was only 46, 7 at the time. I'd have wanted to break it to me gently. Anyway, it was fine. And she put me on HRT there and then. And within 10 days, my symptoms had gone. So instead of being woken up every hour on the hour with this slight sort of pre-hot flush anxiety attack, where you wake up, and the only way I can describe it is if you've ever been through a huge trauma in your life, say, for example, when my father was really unwell and died, you'd wake up and just for a few seconds you'd be fine, and then the doom of the world would hit you. So you'd have that, even though nothing bad had happened, and then you'd have this terrible hot flush. And it was actually a hormone doctor said to me afterwards, oh yes, that's hormonally induced anxiety. And I was like, I don't have anxiety, don't be ridiculous. I'm not the generation that has mental health. I just am who I am. I'm grit and grace. I'm absolutely not going to let my hormones get the better of me. So to find my prescription, to take it, and then to suddenly revert to who I was before I went through the menopause. And I've been on the same prescription ever since. I would not have the career I have without my HRT, can I just say? I would be so sleep deprived I wouldn't be able to string a sentence together.
I love hearing that. And in terms of your skin, how did that change?
I have never had problem skin. I am the generation of women born in the 60s, raised in the 70s, and I always tell this funny story who, basically we just wanted a tan. I wanted to look like a Charlie's Angels girl, which was blonde with very tan skin. The first time I ever went abroad, I was just 18. I went to the south of France before I went to university. I wore a white thong on a beach, an Ombre Solaire SPF 4, maybe 2. Desperate to lose my virginity, came back a virgin, mum, don't worry. Couldn't give it away because I was too tall and flat-chested. And to this day, the only regret I have with my skin is sunbathing. I was ridiculous. And everybody did it, and I can't feel bad about it. And if you speak to anybody my age, and that's what I'm trying to have lasered off as we speak. But actually, I'm very lucky. I've managed to get away with it. My skin's not bad. So the truth of the matter is, for me, perimenopause was something I just put up with. The menopause, which actually happened when I was 50, so I remember having my last period as clearly as anything. I was away with my girlfriend celebrating my 50th birthday, and I had my last period. And then obviously, well, by the time I was 51, I was through it. This is going to sound like bad news to anybody listening to this who's your age, because I'm obviously over 10 years older than you. But your skin actually doesn't start to age when you go through the menopause. It's the 10 and 20 years after you go through the menopause that you're really going to notice the difference. So I'm currently 62, and I'm saying to you, when you're 50, you're going to float through it. Don't even worry about it. You're just as you would say to somebody who was 40, come back to me when you're 50. I'm saying come back to me when you're 60, and I have friends who are 70 who go, come back to me when you're 70. Because that there is a hormonal tipping point, but it is a slow, steady decline. It's not like you suddenly fall sort of off a cliff. The things I have noticed about my skin is it's drier, it's slightly more sensitive, slightly more crepey, but I think there are things you can do for your face. I think that the final goal for the beauty industry and for the dermatology industry is to work out what to do with crepey body skin. I think I've just come from the American Academy of Dermatology, and if they could get rid of stretch marks and crepey skin, and by that I mean no disrespect, Demi, but Demi Moore's upper arms, women like me would pay thousands for them to do it. I actually feel they've got
what
the
has she done?
The face.
Can we just talk about
oh my
that?
God.
I mean, I know everything, so but what? She looks incredible.
I think she had, I did a live the other day with Johnny Bettridge, and I think it's a Dr. Steve Levine who's done her deep plane facelift.
Do we all have to have one?
It's beautiful. You don't have to, but if you want to look like Demi Moore when you're in your 60s, yes. It's simply impossible to look like that and not have work done. And I think she looks incredible. I think it's beautifully done work, absolutely beautifully done work. I tell you, we were talking about it because I worked for Hello for 18 years, so I used to interview celebrities for a living. And I think what was really interesting about the celebrities I interviewed is there was a sort of, and it's Hello magazine, so we're not exactly kind of, you know, we're not the Washington Post or the New York Times. We're not going to ask the difficult questions. But every woman that sat opposite me, with the exception of Jane Fonda, nobody would ever, it was always written into the contract, you could never discuss. You could never discuss surgical work. Jane Fonda owned her work. But also, I think, I would say that 95% of the women I interviewed had work done but wouldn't speak about it. And the two exceptions, I say, would Sarah Jessica Parker and Julianne Moore. And I think Julianne Moore does have a little bit of work done, maybe a little bit of filler, maybe a little bit of Botox, but between roles. But I think she considers herself a serious actress that needs her face to emote. When I interviewed Sarah Jessica Parker at the time, I genuinely think she had not had any work done at all. I think she probably has since then.
I've heard her interviewed saying, I wish I'd had the facelift at 45,
I would suggest she's had a facelift in the last 2 years. And it's been done beautifully. And again, no disrespect to Sarah Jessica Parker. I think the clever way to do a facelift is to lift the lower face and jaw, but not to erase everything here. And that's what character actresses do in the UK. So Hollywood is very forgiving of expression lines, smile lines, you know, frown lines, but Hollywood is very unforgiving of anything
jowls.
Here. It doesn't like jowls. So even some of the world's most famous Shakespearean character actresses have all had lower face work done. And then I think the average member of the public thinks that they're aging gracefully because they haven't then had the rest of their face erased as well. And again, if I come back looking like Demi Moore in a few years' time, I will have seen the same surgeon. You will know. I will own it. I will probably create a video, let's be honest.
Would
here.
You
I
do will. It?
Yes, I would. Absolutely, I
Why
would.
Why have you not then?
Because at the moment, I'm on camera so often, I can't afford the downtime. It's a lot of downtime. It's a lot of downtime. I would
what,
say.
What is it really?
Realistically, it's at least 3 months. So if I suddenly go on a 3-month extended sabbatical and come back looking
We've
at
got your back.
Looking like a cross between Paris Hilton and Jennifer Lopez, you'll know why. I am on camera at least 4 times a week. It's very, very hard to get away with that. But again, I admire people that do it. I think if you've got the money to do it, this is the shocking thing. A really good friend of mine has just sold his beauty company for the second time, and I shan't name it because I don't want to out him. He's gone to a really big American LA surgeon. They have the best surgeons in the world. It's cost him £250,000 to get his facelift. And they've done a really good job on his face as well. And when he Googled it, I said, you didn't come and ask me who I would recommend. And he went, I just wanted the person that did Kris Jenner. And I think, why not? If you've got the money to spend it, go for it. Sell your business, £250,000.
Reassuringly expensive. Right, I'm parking that whole thought. I'm now thinking about timelines.
You need to get Alice Hart Davis on if you want to talk about facelifts and surgeons and aesthetic doctors, because she's the one human guinea pig I look at who's a similar age to me. And I just think she has everything done and I admire it so much. But I'm also quite a wimp. I'd have to be knocked out. I don't want to be awake for any of these treatments.
Would you feel a responsibility to talk about
yes.
it?
Oh, yes. One of the things I was saying, having worked on Hello for all of those years, is, and I understand why celebrities are intensely private, because they are scrutinized from all angles. But I feel in some ways, as a feminist, it does other women a disservice when they suddenly say it's
green
hot
juice.
Yoga, green juice and olive oil skincare. I'm sorry, Jennifer Lopez, it's not. It's just not. It's really not. So I do admire the Jane Fondas of this world who just say, this is what I had done, or the Dolly Partons, this is what I had done. I do admire that.
It takes a lot of money to look this cheap.
Yeah. I also think what's interesting, and I do understand as journalists, there's a continual archive that is regurgitated. So once you've admitted you've had work done, for whatever reason, when a journalist goes through and looks through the archives before they research their feature, they tend to drag that out. And a sub will then put it in a headline. So sort of, it would say, I don't know, Katie Price, you know, 8th facelift of the day or whatever she's had, you know. It's continually regurgitated. Now, for my generation, it's a sort of dirty secret. But I actually think for a whole host of younger people that hopefully that stigma will disappear by the time they're our age.
Do you think they'll own it? Because I think celebrities do own more talking about Botox and filler,
they own,
don't they?
Yeah.
Or they might say...
But they don't own surgery.
No. Why is that, do you think?
I think because there's so much... There is still for a generation so much stigma around it. Look at the fuss when Donatella... I mean, I thought she looked amazing. But look at the fuss when Donatella had her work done. And I think, and this is a very interesting thing from my perspective of writing about beauty for 35 years and being a feminist, is women can be the most judgmental about other women. It tends not to be men that are that judgmental. Whenever I talk about any work I've had done, it's like, well, you're beautiful as you are, or you don't need to do any of this, or what a waste of
from
money.
Women.
Yeah, and it's other women who judge the most. It's not men that judge. And I think that's really interesting. And I don't know the psychology of it. You would need to get the Speakmans back on to chat about it. But there must be a psychological glitch, a disconnect there. Because my feeling is you shouldn't say anything to anybody online that you wouldn't be prepared to come up, tap them on the shoulder and say to their face. And I have a very supportive, very grown-up, slightly older following who are very respectful. And the only time I ever delete comments on my social is if they're being rude about my guest. I don't care what they say about me. I really don't care. And they tend to be quite nice about me. I mean, God, I just did this morning without any makeup on.
As for a thing?
Yeah, because Pamela Anderson did it.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And so they were like, you're going to come on and do a whole item without any makeup. And I was like, God, okay. I never watched it back, obviously. yes, I think it's very interesting. There's a disconnect with women. I want women to empower women no matter their decision, no matter their choice. I recently did a podcast live where people were chatting about women's skincare routines. And somebody said to me, you know, have you ever slept in your makeup? And I went, who didn't sleep in their makeup in their 20s and 30s? Have you ever sunbathed? Who didn't sunbathe in their 20s and 30s? You know, what's the weirdest thing you've ever done? And I said, literally 2 years ago, without my luggage, go into a hotel room and use whatever was available, including the soap and the body lotion, to cleanse my face. Your face isn't going to fall off overnight. That's life. That's relatable. I don't get these high-pressure 10-step routine. I don't get the filtered desire to be perfect. Because if you have a desire to be perfect when you're young, you're never going to come to terms with getting older.
Mm.
Because as you get older, you're slipping away from that societal view of what is perfect every single day. And you have to realise that getting older is a privilege, but also a challenge if you buy into society's perception of perfection.
How do you feel about anti-aging as a term?
I don't have a problem with it because for me, I've grown up with it. I'm a generation that are really hard to offend. I mean, we're just Teflon, my generation. So I don't, and it's a category within skincare, so I don't find it offensive. But I understand the socio implications of saying you're anti-aging. I understand it, but they're actually talking about a mechanism within skin. They're not really talking about it. And what's the alternative? Pro-aging? I mean, I'm not necessarily pro-aging. I think it's a privilege, but I'd quite like to turn back the clock and be 37 again.
Would you?
Yes.
Dream age.
You know what I'd like?
Go on, where would you be in your life?
Actually, I'd be 47, just pre-menopause, because I was doing reformer Pilates 3 times a week and I was in the best shape of my life. So just pre-menopause. And I think also at that age, you are sufficiently mentally mature to cope with most things in life. But physically, if you look after yourself, you can be in your peak. But what I'd really like is I'd like the body of an 18-year-old, but my mind the way it is now. And then you and I would rule the world,
right? Of course
right?
We would. We are anyway.
We'd be too dangerous. I'd be too dangerous. If I could get my 18-year-old body and then stick my 62-year-old brain back into it, I just wouldn't
have
about with
half. Did you appreciate your 18-year-old body when you were 18?
No. I always tell a story, and I hope my mother isn't listening to this. I remember the first time I ever slept with somebody. I was at a party at university the first year I was 18. And I'm very, very tall. I was 5'11 then, I'm 5'10 now. And as a result, I have stretch marks over my hips and thighs, not from growing that way, but from growing that way, because my body literally couldn't cope. And I was incredibly conscious of them. And I remember after sleeping with my first boyfriend, I remember walking out of the room with my back to the wall, sort of trying to be witty and erudite so I didn't have to turn around because I was conscious of my stretch marks. My God, that man wasn't good enough to kiss that backside, let alone for me to walk out backwards. And that's the difference now, realising that actually, and do you know, it was very interesting. I then went to work with supermodels who were all really tall, and a lot of them have stretch marks as well, and that made me feel better about it. But yeah, when if you try and inhabit a world of perfection, you're going to go insane.
What do we totally waste our money on?
I think we totally waste our money on home gadgets that we don't use every single day.
Don't tell me that's red light masks.
No,
not even LED
every day. LED light mask would need to be used for at least 10 minutes every single day, and I'm not compliant. Now, I think I'm busy. I suspect, looking at your bio, you're a lot busier than I am. Do you have 10 minutes to spend every single day?
I do it every day, but remember, I don't sleep. So I do put it on.
You are the Margaret Thatcher of the modern world, right?
Yeah. That's not a compliment.
It is a compliment. It is a compliment because no matter what she stood for, I'm old enough to realise I voted for her because I thought as a woman she would change the world, and I didn't realise. It was the last time I ever voted for a Tory. But I think what's really interesting about that is she famously only slept for 4 hours a day. And I have to be open-minded as a feminist and say that she was a feminist, she truly was a feminist icon. And she ruled that Parliament with a rod of iron.
And those men. I don't disagree. So I, you never want this picture, but I put it on and I put my glasses over the top.
And read my email. Yeah. Yeah, do your emails. So as long as you're using it every single day, I'm fine, but don't expect miracles of it. And the same would be true of all gadgets. So, for example, I really like the new Neura laser. I think it's excellent. There's a radio frequency gadget that's amazing. But unless you're going to use them every single day, they're not going to work. And I always think of them as being the modern equivalent for my generation. We used to get foot spas. Do you remember the foot spas you used to get when you were younger? You'd get one for Christmas, use it once, and then it would just be gathering dust and then up in a charity store. Unless you're going to use it, don't spend your money on it. And if it's a choice between that and good skincare, buy good skincare. And don't sunbathe. Please, people, don't sunbathe.
Really?
Yes. Sorry.
Outdated beauty practices that you'd say, don't do that, that's dangerous.
I don't think there are many beauty practices that are dangerous. The concepts I don't get are the disconnect between companies telling you you have to apply your eye cream with the ring finger, so it has to be a ring finger, so most dental, so you do this with an eye cream, right? And then selling you a gua sha tool. Where you're literally dragging a stone across your face.
Don't do that.
And no, don't do that. Don't stretch your skin. I mean, the disconnect between telling you can't do that to put your eyeliner on, which by the time you're my age, you need to do that, otherwise you'll get little jaggedy marks in your eyeliner. But that's fine. You can massage your face and pull it around. Don't stretch your skin. It's just not good for your skin. Don't never buy a beauty product on a credit card that you can't pay off at the end of the month.
Great tip.
And genuinely, there has been such a revolution in skincare in the last 6 years. You can buy everything you need from Boots and Superdrug. You really can, I promise you. You can get great vitamin C's, you can get great vitamin A's for night, you can get great SPS, you can get great moisturizers, humectants, products for breakouts, body products. They're all available on the high street. And skincare on the high street has never been better than it is now. There used to be a huge disconnect between quite rubbishy high street products and quite high-end beautiful products. And now there's just this beautiful, if you go into Boots, they tend to be called dermatology approved or dermatological skincare or clinical skincare. And you'll see two aisles of all those brands, sort of La Roche-Posay, Bioma, Bubble, Avène, Aveeno. Everything you need is there. Everything you need and more is there.
What do we say to our daughters? I've got a 14-year-old daughter whose skincare regime is just...
bonkers.
Insane.
Do you take her into Space NK and give her your credit card?
No, I won't, because I won't.
Good on you.
And B is too much. It's good on you. 10 things. So what do you say to them if they're overdoing it?
So earlier on, we were chatting about where your daughter goes to school, and she goes to school very close to where I live, and there is a Space NK on my high street, and it is empty during the week and just full of 14 and 50 year olds with their mum's credit card at the weekend, and it's heartbreaking. I would say that, and this is going to take a long time for a person that age to realise it, but that the skincare aimed at somebody my age is only going to do your skin damage. You don't need it. Unless you have breakouts, which obviously a lot of 14 year olds have, and in which case you need products specifically formulated for breakouts. Using anti-aging products is not going to do your skin any good. It's crazy. But also I'm going to say the unsexiest advice ever is if you just wear an SPF and you just cleanse your skin, that's all you need to do at 14 unless you've got breakouts. And okay. I know they don't want to hear it because it's not sexy.
Great advice.
And also, can I just say two ranges that I highly recommend for teenagers that are well formulated and you can use with impunity would be Bioma and Bubble. They're just really lovely products. And they're brightly coloured, and they're sweet, and they're sexy, but they're not high levels of active, so they're not going to damage your skin.
And menopause skin. So we're increasingly seeing a lot of the big beauty companies marketing and formulating specifically for menopause skin. What do you think about that?
I really hate beauty brands monetizing my menopause. I really hate it. And I tell you why that is. And that is because if you go back onto those two aisles I spoke about, everything you need is already there. So if you think about menopausal skin not as a skin type, because it's not a skin type, the menopause causes symptoms that any age can get. It can cause breakouts that teenagers get. So you could end up using the same spot product as your teenager. It causes dry, itchy skin, but anybody of any age, your husband could have dry, itchy skin. So don't think about it as being a skin type. Think about what it's done to your skin. Has it made it more sensitive? Has it made it drier? Has it given you breakouts? And then go back to the original old school products that have been around that are on that clinical aisle, and then literally problem solve it. So problem solve the breakouts, problem solve the dryness. And one of the most common problems that women in menopause get is they get very dry, itchy body skin. And for that, I always recommend the Bioderma Atoderm range. And it's a range that was created for babies with dry skin and people with dermatitis and eczema. And there is a beautiful unscented cleansing shower oil. And that's your first port of call.
Thank you. Before I let you go, we would love to know your top tips for living your best life in midlife. So I'm going to go through some questions.
Ready? Go for it. Quick fire.
Okay. If you could pick one skincare brand that you would recommend for midlife women, what would it be?
Oh, you're going to make me choose one. I would say if you're going to look at hydration, choose Avène.
Favourite fitness or gym brand?
Clothing.
Clothing.
Yeah, I'm a reformer Pilates woman and I need to get back to it. And I would say probably Lululemon, but maybe Sweaty Betty. I'm not trendy at all.
Top wellness tip, one thing that you do.
Sleep. I love my sleep. I love my sleep, seriously.
Favourite influencer, expert, doctor for menopause advice and support, who's your go-to?
Interestingly enough, Naomi Potter. And the interesting thing about Naomi Potter, and I love Davina, she's actually a working, I wouldn't say she's a friend, but she's a working colleague and I adore her and I adore what she's done in that space. The interesting thing about Naomi Potter is my advice normally would be don't ask for advice for somebody who hasn't been through the menopause. I don't think Naomi's been through the menopause, but she's very knowledgeable.
Very good. Favourite supplement for tackling menopausal symptoms?
I mean, I could not live without my B12, my iron and my vitamin D.
One beauty product that every woman in midlife should use?
SPF, it's never too late, ladies.
One food or type of food that you think makes a difference to how you feel?
Caffeine. I'm sorry, I'm a caffeine addict. I am an addict.
How many and what?
I have lived my entire life on deadline. And it suits my personality, obviously, because I do not think I have high stress levels. But I come alive when I'm given deadline. I love live TV. I love my editor on The Times, Nicola Jewell, emailing me and saying, can you file by the end of the day? I love turning the camera on and thinking on my feet. So it just feeds into my personality. It's a source of stress that I am in control of. Therefore, it's not a negative form of stress. So I live for the adrenaline rush.
And guilty pleasure, finally?
Carbohydrates.
What's your poison? Cheat ones?
Any carbohydrates. I have friends that have lost so much weight on the keto diet and they look incredible. And if you make me choose between protein and carbohydrates, I should be a big fat Italian mama dressed in black in Sicily. I would happily eat pasta all day and bread all day every day.
Thank you. Nadine, thank you so much for joining me on Grit and Grace. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening today. And thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.